so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Hey everybody, Bill Schaefer here with Mark Middleton. Glad to have you with us for another edition of Growing Bolder, a program that will show you that it is never too late to live life to the fullest, that changes are within reach of all of us, that no matter who we are or what our situation, we can all make a difference. Over the next hour, you're going to hear how others found the inspiration and courage to make it happen in their lives.
We're talking about some great stuff on today's program. One of the most beloved cast members of Little House on the Prairie will join us, and she has quite a story to share. We'll also meet a physician from the UCF College of Medicine who will talk about when you might need to see a gerontologist, and then the inspiring story of a Native American who just became a world record holder in powerlifting at the age of 73. But first up, a musician whose hits you will recognize right away, whose audience has suddenly gotten a whole lot younger, and you're about to find out why. Amazing people, amazing stories. It's time for Growing Bolder.
That's a pretty good clue as to who you are about to hear from. He is a singer-songwriter who was part of the most successful duo in the 1970s. And what's even cooler than that is he's still singing, still writing, still performing and creating. And as he once said himself, I'm all right. Nobody worry about me.
Yeah, he did say that, Bill, and he said far more than that. Other very memorable things like, even though we ain't got money, I'm so in love with you, honey. He's the guy that said, please celebrate me home. And these days, it totally makes sense for the guy who wrote House at Pooh Corner to dive into another project for children, which he has done. But this one might surprise you, folks. A Footloose children's book. Let's find out more about it as we welcome the great Kenny Loggins. Hey, Kenny, how are you?
All right, how you doing today?
Man, we're doing great. We appreciate your time. Congratulations on the book. You know, House at Pooh Corner made a whole lot of sense. The Frosty the Snowman thing you did last year, also excellent. How did you take Footloose, a song that won a Grammy back in 84, and turn it into something for kids?
Well, I hadn't seen it coming, really. It was my book publisher suggested it to me, and he said, have you ever considered the... He's the guy that got me into Frosty. And he said, have you ever considered rewriting Footloose? And obviously I hadn't. And I said, well, how do you visualize that? And he said, I don't know exactly how you do it, but it's got to have a ton of animals because my granddaughter loves animals. And I said, well, so does mine. So let's drop into this and see what happens. And I started thinking about, you know, where would you find a ton of animals? So that would obviously be the zoo. And since it's Footloose, we'll have them all dancing.
And you may not get the idea. This book is part of a package that also includes a CD of some great tunes that everybody in the family can listen to. And if you're wondering if the new version of Footloose still rocks, take a listen to this.
Zookeeper, Big Jack, checks in his star map.
It's a great version, Kenny, that sounds like you had tons of fun putting together. Do you think that's part of the reason why the kids' music that you have come up with has been so successful, even for parents and grandparents? I mean, it's just great music.
Well, that's just the main thing I try to do now, is make sure that the music can be loved by the parents and the grandparents as much as it is loved by the children. And I don't think that's ever been done with children's music before, you know, because kids lock into a song, as we all know, kids will lock into a song or an album, and they'll just play it over and over and over again 6 million times. And when I was about to have my fourth child, Luke, I realized I was about to be sent back into Barney Land for another couple of years. And I thought, oh, my God, somebody's got to write something that I can love, too. And I realized it pretty much had to be me.
You had to get it done yourself. Folks, we're talking with the great Kenny Loggins, the singer, songwriter, and author. And Kenny, this is really an interesting time in your life personally. As you know, this is the Growing Bolder program. We celebrate people that don't just grow older, but grow bolder. They expand their horizons. They take risks. They try new things. And what's it like to be a grandfather? What's it like to be Kenny Loggins at 68?
It's really getting easier because I'm in the music business, but I'm not, what's the term, in it but not of it? You know, it's not, it doesn't completely occupy my brain the way it did when I was a kid. I'm having more fun with it. And I think that's something I wish I could have done when I was in my 30s and 40s and played it a little looser, you know, had more fun with it. Pretty much my motto is, you know, that the follow your heart thing for me is that I follow where the fun is. I just follow it like breadcrumbs, and you pick up one after the other, and where I thought I was going may not be where I ended up because I'm just going where the fun says to go. And it's been great, and there's been a lot more opportunity, a lot more financial opportunity, each one coming with, you know, the next breadcrumb.
And it's not just about looking back either, Kenny. You're still writing. We've talked about that. You've got a new band. Tell us about Blue Sky Riders and that whole really cool Kickstarter campaign for the album, Why Not?
Oh, thank you. I started Blue Sky Riders about 7 years ago. Wanted to keep writing and recording and wanted to do something different. And I went to Nashville to make the divorce record, which seemed to make sense. You know, you write it while you're sitting at the bar. The first record was, we called Finally Home. And wrote everything as a trio, sung it as a trio. Sometimes Gary has lead, sometimes Georgia Middleman has a lead vocal, and sometimes I have the lead vocal, and then just like a real band. And we kept going. We wrote some more material. We started a Kickstarter campaign so we could make our second record, and that worked out incredibly well. And the second record we called Why Not, and now we're talking to BMG. It looks like they're going to release a sort of best of for international release, which we couldn't do on a Kickstarter campaign.
Hey, Kenny, I wanted to ask you about this, too, because you sure seem to be in great shape physically. Are you dealing with any health issues, and do you ever envision yourself, like, sailing off into the sunset to retire?
I've had a couple moments in my life where I've sailed off into the sunset, or thought I was going to sail off into the sunset to retire, but I didn't do well with it. I found that I immediately got sick. I got depressed. It wasn't working for me. And actually, the first time I tried that, I was 50. As you said, I'm 68. When I tried it at 50, that was because Sony Records, which I'd signed when I was 21, they dropped me at 50. And that was very depressing for me. It was sort of like getting fired without knowing why and without knowing where you're supposed to go. And in the process of coming out of that depression, I discovered something that Stephen King had written about how he had to write every day or he'd go crazy. And I realized I was the same kind of animal. I had to stay in the studio. I had to keep writing. I had to stay creative in my life and have an outlet for that creativity, or I would get depressed. Mm. And so I dug into my savings and I made a record called It's About Time, And no one ever heard the record because I couldn't really release it and promote it the way a record company could. But I learned that, you know, I could stay in the studio. I worked with the new technology, and I was good at it, and I got happy again. And so my goal was then to continue to be creative, continue to write and record, but that I needed to find a way to do it with other people's money. We call it OPM.
Yeah, see, Kenny, it's almost like it's an adjustment that we all have to go through when we hit a certain stage. Last question here. You know, you've done such a good job with these kids' books. If you were writing the Kenny Loggins story, what would the message be? What would you hope that we could learn from all the things that you've seen and been through yourself?
There's no one way to do this, but I highly recommend, and I tell my children to try to believe that, you know, you can follow your heart and make a living at it. The ideal, you know, the old saying, if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And that's what I try to teach my children, that if they follow what they love, they'll figure out a way to make a living at it. And then they'll have a much better experience of their lives than, you know, having to get a job that they hate.
That's awesome, Kenny. We all want to thank you for filling our hearts with great music for our entire adult lives. Check out the children's book Footloose, written by Kenny Loggins, and the great CD that comes with it that you will like as much as your kids and grandkids. And do keep an eye on Kenny, because this is one rocker who has a lot going on as he keeps on growing bolder. Thanks, Kenny. Up next, she traveled the world only to find her true purpose up on the roof in her very own hometown. This is Growing Bolder. Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. Being up on a roof can be a little unnerving for anyone. Roofing is dangerous, difficult, and exhausting. It's why so many do a double take when they spot Martha Cole running around up there. At the age of 76, she's out there every week volunteering with Habitat for Humanity of Collier County, Florida.
As for people that think I'm too old, they need to think again, that's all.
Martha is right. At home up there, she's been doing it for a quarter century, ever since she first heard they needed volunteers.
And I thought to myself, that would be really a good thing to do. It would be fun, and it's outdoors, which I love.
So she called the volunteer coordinator to sign up.
Well, that's great, he said, but we don't have any work for women right now. We're roofing. And I said, wait a minute, you don't even know me.
That was back in 1992. Today, she has to be reminded that in a few short years, she'll be pushing 80.
Well, I'm having the time of my life, frankly. I love this age. I never thought I would. I never looked forward to it.
Martha believes that extending a hand is what life is all about at any age. She says it's a lesson she learned way back as a child. Coming from a large family, she was one of seven children. She says you quickly realize how much more you can accomplish when everybody works together.
I was raised that way. I was raised that, you know, that's what you do. You have advantages in life, and you pay it forward. You help other people to the best of your ability. And Habitat for me was the perfect fit.
It's why she's always been so proud to be part of Habitat Collier all these years. But Martha's always been someone who loves unusual experiences, something she's had plenty of her whole life.
After college, I did a lot of crazy fun things, like I played one season of professional women's football.
But She traded in the football to become a wife and a mother. Years flew by. Oh, the desire for adventure was always there, but she pushed it down until one fateful visit to the doctor. But it's not quite what you think.
What happened was I went for a physical, a regular physical exam when I was 66. And the doctor said, "You have the heart and lungs of a 16-year-old. He said, "You're probably going to live to be really old, so you should keep yourself in good shape so you'll be able to do things when you're old."
At any rate, it was the beginning of a whole new life. Half marathons led to marathons, and those triathlons led to a full Ironman triathlon. That's a 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bike ride, and a 26-mile run, which she did at the age of 70.
I won my age group because there were only two people in my age group and the other lady didn't finish. So I was very slow, but I finished it. It was one of the major accomplishments of my life.
And that's saying a lot, considering her list of other adventures, like scuba diving, swimming with whale sharks off the Yucatan, and
the biggest and most grueling, by far harder than the Ironman, was climbing Mount Aconcagua, which is the highest mountain in the world outside of the Himalayas.
Each challenge has only served to reinforce how she's lived her life and what she's always known in her heart.
The way I think of it is, life is uncertain. So if you want something out of life, go for it. Live it to the max, you know? Do all you can do. If you have the opportunity, go ahead. Take that 6,600-mile train ride across Russia. Go on an African safari. Go to the Arctic. Go to Antarctica. Do all you get the chance to do. You won't be sorry. I've been lucky enough to do all those things, and I am sure glad I didn't say, "Well, I'm too busy. I can't do this. I can't." Live it to the max. That's my advice.
But there's one more important point that sums up her philosophy, and that's that her adventures are made even more fulfilling because of the work she does for others through Habitat Collier. She says it's great to take the trips and enter the races.
But life is all about balance. And I wouldn't feel very good just going through life, crossing things off my bucket list, if I didn't balance it with spending a lot of time helping other people. So, really, it's all about the balance. And I'm loving my life.
Coming up on Growing Boulder, a man who set a world record in powerlifting, and he's 73. Stay connected to Growing Boulder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures. Schaefer and Mark Middleton, and we are Growing Boulder. Here with some great news, important news. We all have a tendency to let life get away from us. You know how it is. Months can go by, sometimes a lot more than that, before you realize maybe the pants don't fit anymore or the cholesterol is too high. Well, here's the good news, folks. It is never too late to regain control, and our next guest is here to prove it.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk to this gentleman. Now, this is a guy who did not begin begin to lift weights until he turned 70, which was about 3 years ago. So it's not like he's been doing this all of his life. But in those three short years, not only has he transformed his health, he has become a champion. At first, he started smashing state records. Then he thought, you know, maybe I can do more than that. So he made it to the Nationals, where he won there. And that qualified him for the biggest event of all, the AAU World Championships. Let's welcome the retired science teacher turned record-setting powerlifter, 73-year-old Ray Fournier. Hey, Ray, how are you today?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Man, thanks so much for your time. Congratulations on what you've accomplished. As we noted, you just got back from the World Championships. Tell us how it went. How did you do?
Did well. There are three events in the powerlifting, and I won the squat, the deadlift, and the total. So there are four records that you can get. I got three out of the four.
So you set three world records in one event. Are you surprising yourself by how much you're accomplishing?
The thing is that I got into powerlifting quite by accident, actually. And I had really no experience with it previously, but I happened to be working out at a gym, community center, and a gentleman came up and said, hey, you're doing pretty well there. You ought to try going into powerlifting. And he was a former powerlifter, so he knew what he was talking about. And I said, at the time, I said, I'm not interested. It's something that seems to be tied to steroids and maximizing performance with drugs, and I said I wouldn't be interested. But I checked it out anyway. He convinced me that I should at least check it out. I checked it out, and he said, give it a try, and if you don't like it, you can always quit. But I got into it, and things went uphill all the way and got to the top.
Hey, Ray, give us an idea of what you do, because it wasn't very long ago when the stereotype of somebody in their 70s or 80s lifting weights, it would be like full milk jugs. You'd go, hey, he did a curl with those. What kind of weight are you pushing around?
Well, in the squat, it's about 310 pounds, and in the bench, I'm about 210, and in the deadlift, about 410.
Oh, man.
Just amazing. And Ray, you are inspiring, so many of us to know that we can start something relatively late in life and be successful at it. Not only are you inspiring all of us of a certain age, one of the interesting things about your story is that you are a member of the Oneida Indian Nation. What kind of response and feedback have you gotten from your fellow Native Americans?
Well, actually, very good. The Oneida Indian Nation is actually sponsors me in my activities, so they support that. And I get a lot of good feedback from people about what's happening, and they seem to be very proud of what's happening with it.
As a Native American, I'm guessing that at some point or another you've experienced racism, and also maybe as a person in your 70s, maybe you've experienced a different kind. People telling you that you're too old, it's too dangerous, you'd be better off to sit home and rest. How do you not give in to that ageist stereotype?
Well, I don't know. I've always had a philosophy that as I grew up, and looking to retirement, I felt that when I retired, I knew I set a goal for myself when I retired. I said that what I'm going to do is I'm going to stay in shape. I'm going to try to achieve some of the things that I wanted in retirement other than just sitting around watching TV or in a rocking chair. So that was a goal of mine when I retired. I said I'm not going to be passive. I'm not going to sit around and watch TV. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do things. In fact, I'm going to do more in retirement than when I was working.
That is exactly, Ray, the growing bolder attitude. Folks, we're talking to Ray Fournier, who started lifting weights at the age of 70. Now he's 73 and holds three, maybe four world records in powerlifting. And Ray, other than the acclaim that you've received, other than the awards that you now have, how has this transformed your life? How do you feel differently now than you did 3 years ago?
Well, I always tried to stay in shape. But what this does is it focuses my activities so that I can work on specific lifts and gain certain kinds of performance. But I've always tried to do that, and I continue to do it. I do other things other than just weightlifting in my workout activities. And what I find is that I'm actually gaining muscle and I'm getting stronger as I progress. 3 years ago, when I started out, I was at a certain level, but now I have, in fact, I've increased even since I lifted in the World Championships. So I continue to grow, and I feel that's very important.
And Ray, just so people know that you're not the only one out there. You're not the lone voice. What's the competition like for a 73-year-old out there?
Well, very interesting. It was in the competition in Las Vegas this past September when I won the World Championship. There was another gentleman there that we were lifting against one another. And in the final lift, we were actually tied. And what I had to do is I had to lift a certain weight in order to beat him, and actually tie him. But what I had done is I had moved up to a higher weight class, and I was at the low end of the higher weight class. And if you tie somebody in powerlifting, the man with the lower weight or the person with the lower weight actually wins, and that's what happened. So in the final, I had to lift that final lift, and won as a result of getting that lift and tying him. So the competition is good out there. There's people all over the world that are doing great things with this. And I've run into some people from various countries that are actually absolutely phenomenal in terms of what they do.
Folks, this is a guy who is smashing stereotypes. Do not believe the stuff that you've read that as you get older, it's impossible to gain bone density or muscle mass, because Ray Fournier has been doing both. Ray, in a final 20 seconds, give us a takeaway. What's the message you want all of us to know that you've learned about life in general?
Well, we're human beings. We're made to move. We need to keep moving. That's what keeps us healthy and gives us direction. And I would encourage anyone that's 60, 70, even 80 years old or beyond to keep going, keep doing it, set some goals, and go for them.
Ray, it's a great message, one that resonates with people no matter how old you are. You get what's going on here, folks. This is huge. This may be the biggest story of our lives, that when we get to our 70s, when we get to our 80s, the world is open to opportunity, to almost anything. He's a state, national, now world record-holding power lifter, even though he didn't take it up until he was 70 years old. Continued good luck and good health to 73-year-old Ray Fournier. Coming up, why the next time you go see the doctor, you might want to see a gerontologist. We'll hear from the UCF College of Medicine next on Growing Bolder.
Growing Bolder and Humana are celebrating the opportunity of aging and smashing stereotypes with the new 65 Plus. We're sharing examples of people 65 and older who are pursuing their passions and leading happy, healthy, and active lives. You can inspire others by sharing your own photos and stories. Find more information at growingbolder.com/new65plus.
My guard stood hard when abstract threats to noble tyranny.
This is Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton along with Bill Schaefer. And you know, folks, we are living through a truly remarkable time where so many things that we never truly understood before, especially when it comes to the way in which we age, are now being studied, questioned, reexamined in ways that may very well change all of our futures.
Isn't that interesting? In fact, the entire field of gerontology, which really not very long ago was more or less hidden in the background, it's really stepped up to take its place as one of the most interesting, active, and evolving fields in medicine. Well, we're joined now by an assistant professor of family medicine and gerontology at the University of Central Florida College of Medicine, Dr. Mariana Dongiolo. Doctor, how are you?
Well, I'm doing very, very good. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm a little confused about one thing, if you could jump in and help us out. Can you explain to me, because I get lost in the titles, what is the difference between a general practitioner and a gerontologist?
Well, you know, a geriatrician or gerontologist is, in general, medical doctors, although it could be a PhD with expertise in gerontology, but let's focus first on the physician. Physicians who are first trained as internists or as family physicians, and then they do a subspecialty in geriatrics. So they get specially trained to meet the unique healthcare needs of older adults, illnesses, diseases, medications, a lot of things that affect older people as they age. We work a lot on prevention, management, and development of care plans that address the special health of the people who are aging.
Well, you know, the good news that we talk about on every one of these programs is the way that people age, the opportunity for age is changing all the time. And I think, Doc, we all kind of know when we change from a pediatrician to another doctor. How do we know when we need to start seeing a gerontologist?
Well, I would say there's no definite age to start seeing a gerontologist. We can say that I always make the joke that we can see a pediatrician until, you know, maybe we are 20. You know, as things are changing and we are living longer, the cycles of life and the new generations are also changing and moving forward. So we can see a general adult doctor maybe up until we are 65, even longer. But typically, gerontologists, you start thinking in visiting one at age 75 and older. And still people will say, you know, I'm a 75-year-old person with no, I'm not taking medications, I don't have any chronic illness. Do I really need to see a gerontologist? Well, maybe not yet. So, you know, the age is just, something that it's a chronological situation, but what you have to look is independently at the patient and who you have in front of you. You have sometimes people that are in their 50s with multiple chronic conditions, and maybe a gerontologist is the right person to see for that person.
Right. It's not about the number of years that you have.
It's not about the number. Right. But it's about which conditions you are carrying. I mean, how are you living your life? And how, you know, gerontologists will start looking into prevention of aging, but also help you manage already existing chronic conditions that are affecting your quality of life. And as I would say, it wouldn't be an age cut to start seeing one, but just looking individually at every case, you know, and make a decision if there's a need of a gerontologist.
Dr. Dongiolo, there are things, though, that do seem to affect almost all of us as we get older. You know, like I'm thinking of bone health and hypertension, diabetes, things like that that crop up for so many of us. What are the
right.
biggest concerns for aging patients?
Well, I would say, you know, there are so many chronic conditions that affect quality of life. One of the things I would say is conditions can be present in our body, but is the way they affect our life, especially our function, our daily function, like, you know, the things that we want to do in order to age in place in our homes or in order to enjoy life with our loved ones. Those are the things that really, you know, when the chronic condition impacts health, in that sense, impacting your daily life, is when they really become something that you want to address. I would say there are many chronic conditions that are important, but specifically in the elderly, as they want to age in their homes, there are many things we have to look at. One is the multiple medications that people are taking when they are in their 60s. I would say 65 people and older, they take five medications on an average or more. And the way those medications interact in the body is totally different than what happens in a younger person. So as gerontologists, we look at polypharmacy when people are taking more than five medications at a time. And we also look at bone health, osteoporosis, osteopenia, that is not really quite osteoporosis when you have really very debilitating bones, and how osteoporosis impact daily life. You know, for example, a fall at home, most of the time they happen at home. They can be very devastating because they can cause a fracture, and from there people will go into the hospital, maybe get a replacement, maybe from there never come back home, end up in a nursing home or in a, you know, rehab place, and then even if they return home, they will never get back to that baseline status that they had before of functioning. So going back to that, we look at functioning and how chronic conditions affect daily function. And what we try to do is optimize the management of those chronic conditions to keep people as function as they can for as longer as they can. And at the same time, we look at their house and see how can we optimize their home environment. That's key, in order to help people age in place, age in their homes.
Well, Dr. D'Angelo, it feels great to know that there are physicians like you out there. As 10,000 of us are turning 65 every day, you're helping take care of us now. But what about tomorrow? Now, you're a physician and a teacher at the esteemed UCF College of Medicine. What are we doing to prepare tomorrow's doctors to meet our needs in the future?
Well, that is a great question, actually, because there are only really about, I would say, it changes a little bit plus or minus, but we are about 7,000 geriatricians in the United States, you know, for the millions of seniors and many more that are coming up soon. We have this kind of white wave, senior wave coming right now. And so the challenges of getting more physicians knowledgeable on the complexity of senior care are immense. And the reality is, no, we will not have probably more geriatricians. Even if we increase our geriatrician numbers to 10,000, which will be, you know, we have to do a lot of work, to 10,000, we will never be able to address and have enough physicians in geriatrics to take care of seniors. So this is what we're doing. We are not trying to create more geriatricians, but we're trying to start from the very beginning when we are training medical students to become the doctors of the future and train them in the knowledge of managing senior conditions and being aware of aging and the needs of the elderly, despite the career, the specialty they would go into in the future.
It's a very interesting time and age that we are going through right now. She is Dr. Mariana D'Angelo, Assistant Professor of Family Medicine and Gerontology at the UCF College of Medicine. Up next, we'll catch up with everybody's favorite school teacher from Little House on the Prairie. This is Growing Boulder.
We've got news. Watch.growingboulder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingboulder.com is now live.
All right, now that is a TV theme song. You probably already guessed the show, too. Well, we're about to meet someone who is a big part of its success and its legacy. One of the most loved characters was the school teacher. You remember her name? Of course, we're talking about Miss Beadle from Little House on the Prairie.
How can you not smile when you hear that? Love to this very day for representing honor and wholesomeness with an unfailing moral compass. Well, it turns out that was actually quite an acting job, because in her brand new autobiography, she reveals that for a while, her life was just the opposite, and that she had to battle to overcome more than her share of challenges. The book is called Little House in the Hollywood Hills, A Bad Girl's Guide to Finding Miss Beadle, Mary X, and Me. Let's say hello to Miss Beadle herself, Charlotte Stewart. Hey, Charlotte, how are you?
I'm fine. Good morning, everyone.
Man, we're excited to talk to you, and let's start with the title. What do you mean by A Bad Girl's Guide?
Well, let's face it, I, you know, lived through the 60s in Hollywood and the 70s doing that wonderful show, Little House on the Prairie. I was young. There were a lot of attractive people in my life, and I partied a lot. I had a very good time, but it took its toll a little bit. But you know what? I'm 75 now, and I just got married a year ago, so life definitely goes on.
And that's the whole part of growing bolder, Charlotte, is that it's never too late. It's never too late to find what you're looking for, to start a new adventure, to kindle a new romance. How did it happen that you married in your mid-70s?
Well, my dear David, my late husband and I were married for 20 years. We moved up here to Napa, which is the beautiful wine country, when he was ill. And after he passed away, I ran into an old friend I hadn't seen in over 30 years. And we just kind of, you know, rekindled an attraction that was early, and we got married. And it's been lovely. We just got back from France, where I was invited this summer because we have so many Little House on the Prairie fans in France. So it was, I have so many benefits still coming on from my time with Little House on the Prairie. I'm so lucky.
You know, meeting an old former lover and then getting married, wasn't that an episode? I swear I saw that on the show.
Actually, my friend Josh Bryant played Mr. Sims, the pig farmer. And I was delighted when Michael Landon showed me a couple of pictures of actors he was considering to play Miss Beadle's, future husband. And it turned out that one of them was Josh Bryant, who I went to the Pasadena Playhouse with in 1958. And I said, so I looked at the pictures and I went, oh, well, gosh, that guy looks good. So he was hired to play Mr. Sims. We had a great time.
Folks, we're talking with Charlotte Stewart, who, as you've probably guessed, was one of the stars of Little House on the Prairie. She's written an autobiography which she reveals that her actual life was much different than her life on screen. What kind of reaction are you getting when people read the book, Charlotte, and they realize that Miss Beadle wasn't really what you were like?
Well, you know, when I wrote this book, I wrote it with my friend Andy Dembski. And, you know, we started out because he said, oh, you tell great stories. I thought, yeah, okay. But then as we got into the more private parts of my life, I decided that I didn't want it to be one of those Hollywood, oh, she's so sweet, she's so good, she, you know, never had a problem in her life. And I decided to share with my fans, you know, what was really going on in my life. I had a few hard times. I made a lot of mistakes. Don't we all? Mm. You know, we learn as we go along. And, you know, I was young when I was on Little House on the Prairie. Well, young to me. I was in my early 30s, making the first real money I had ever made in my career. And I got involved, you know, in the 70s. Everybody in Hollywood was doing cocaine and, you know, drinking. And I because I had the money to spend, I went along with it. Thank God, in 1984, I got sober and met my dear David, and everything was fine. But, you know, I did. I made a lot of mistakes. I'm getting, you know, some fans are shocked by the things I talk about in my book. But others say, thank God somebody said it out loud, because that's what I went through too, or, you know.
Well, you know, Charlotte, it is amazing. People don't realize that a star that they see on TV could have the same real-life problems we all do. But you had tough times. You had the addictions. You had financial issues. You're a breast cancer survivor. And yet you say that there are critically important lessons in the challenges that we all face. What have you learned about yourself through these challenges?
Well, I learned that I'm not unlike, you know, a lot of my contemporaries. I learned that, you know, having an illness like cancer is not the end of the world. I'm so lucky. I support a lot of cancer causes right now that are very important to me. And, you know, life does go on, and you can't be discouraged by setbacks. I was so lucky to have the people in my life, the family that I have who supported me through the years, and even members of my family have gone through some hard times, and they were able to come to me and say, what did you do? And I was able to share with them things that maybe I hadn't talked to them about before. And I still have friends who call me and say, what happened when your husband was ill and you knew he was dying? How did you deal with that? You know, you deal with these things a day at a time. And I have to say that I made a lot of mistakes in my life, but I don't really have any regrets. I'm happy and healthy today. I'm traveling a lot for Little House in the Prairie and Twin Peaks. I'm in the new Twin Peaks series that comes out next year. And life is good.
Boy, you can hear the passion and enthusiasm in your 75-year-old voice, and we love that. And before we let you go, let's get to some of the dirt, because I don't know if this is a tell-all, but you tell quite a bit, including relationships, romantic or otherwise, with Jim Morrison, Bill Murray, John Voight. Were these suitors of yours?
No. No, these were people that I worked with or met along the way in my acting career. You know, it wasn't that I wasn't hanging out with a bunch of plumbers or accountants. The people that were in my life were actors, entertainers. I was young. I was working. I supported myself. I never was looking for somebody to take care of me. So I had a lot of fun. You know, I went on a 4-day trip with Jim Morrison when he was at his lowest ebb in life. He had had a lot of trouble with, he was going to be facing a jail term in Florida. He just wanted to get away with a friend, albeit friend with benefits. But we had a good time, and I cherished his friendship. Bill Murray, I hardly knew. I didn't even know who he was. We met at a nightclub one night, and he went home with me. I never saw him again. You know, At the time, I had never watched Saturday Night Live. I didn't even know who Bill Murray was. John Voight, I met in a restaurant. He came into my clothing store and asked me out several times. You know, that's the way my life was going. Those are the people that were in my life.
Charlotte, you have so many interesting experiences. Some of them are very inspirational as well. And you're such a great role model for, as Mark said, passion for life in your mid-70s. Can you leave us with a takeaway? What do you hope that we all learn from this amazing perspective you've had in life?
You know, I wake up every day and look forward to what's in front of me, and I stay busy. I'm always working. I have a sewing studio in my house. I raise money for a breast cancer program here in my home, my town of Napa, and I make what I call Beetle bags. These are tote bags with pictures of Miss Beetle and Michael Landon and Karen Grassley, who played Ma, and I sell them at events where I appear, and the money goes to a program in Napa called the Wellness Center, and it keeps me busy. I work every day. And I think that's what I look forward to, is being creative and traveling and meeting the fans. I still do that.
Well, you are so positive, and you have such energy that it's very infectious, and I know people are going to want to run out and find the book called Little House in the Hollywood Hills. Definitely a fascinating read. You can hear why. And an interesting perspective on a fascinating life. Our thanks to Miss Beadle herself, Charlotte Stewart.
And remember, folks, life is precious. Our days are numbered, so get out there and live large each and every day, because that is Growing Boulder.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. Say